I find that generally when you start to try to reduce your online time, you will discover what I call the attention vacuum or the stimulus vacuum. Your attention span is used to being way up here. So when you reduce the amount of time you're online, you watch a little less TV, you listen to less podcasts, you bring that level down here, you're still looking for this level of stimulation. Now, ideally, what the point here is, at least what I'm trying to do for myself, is to bring my desire and my need for stimulation down here to a manageable level to where my head is above the water. But first, I have to deal with this gap here. And what generally happens, I've done this before, what generally happens is instead of you just going down here and suffering and getting used to it, you start grabbing at things and trying to use them to fill that void. So, for example, one thing that people do, for example, they say, oh, I don't have a problem with everything. My problem is just with Twitter. So they'll stop using Twitter or they'll reduce their Twitter. I'm only going to go on once a week or whatever. But then what they end up doing is using Instagram 10 times more than they would have to fill that gap back above over their head where they're overstimulated. For me, this time going through, one of the first things I did the first week where I started reducing was, okay, I'm going to go online less. So put the laptop over here. Don't grab the laptop. Turn the computer in the office off. Put the phone in the bedroom. You know, create that distance between all those. So what did I do? Instead, I ended up watching more television. So I really wasn't dealing with this gap. I was clinging onto something and amplifying something that wasn't a problem before in order to still feel that stimulation gap, that vacuum. Other things that can do this. I caught myself after just one day, luckily, but I got an offer on my phone, said 1 month free of Apple Arcade. And I said, hey, you know what? Every once in a while I sit down, I like to mess around with a game on my phone. I'm usually listening to a podcast or something. So it just gives me something to do with my eyes. It's not a problem. I don't play games that much. So, you know, I deserve a little relaxation. Maybe I'll just put it in there. I play it, you know, a half hour every day, maybe an hour, you know, it's cool. That's not what happened. That's what happened the first day. The second day, I'm sitting on the couch and I'm playing this game. And all of a sudden I realize it's been like 2.5 hours. And I've been listening to podcasts on podcasts upon podcasts playing this game. And I'm like, I haven't done anything all this time. I haven't done anything. My phone goes off right now. So when you allow that vacuum to be filled with something else, you're actually never dealing with the problem. You're still in the overstimulated state. I realized that luckily, like I said, after one day, and I deleted it off my phone, canceled that free trial. I said, you know what? Not worth it. Not worth it. What I've been catching myself doing a few times this week is filling that with YouTube. And here's the sneaky thing. This is something you got to be careful of. I started watching more YouTube videos, but I didn't realize what I was doing was dealing with that attention or stimulation gap, because what I was watching was videos about journaling, videos about organization projects in the home, analog stuff. So I thought because I was paying attention to analog things that I wasn't engaging with the digital, even though I was engaging with that content through a digital medium. All right, excuse the line on my head, but it's hot in here and I got to take the hat off for a little bit. Other ways that I've been trying to deal with this reduction of stimulus is to find ways to work and be productive and not disappear off the face of the earth, which unfortunately, to some degree, when it comes to, I hate this term, but it's just the shortest term to say what I mean, content creation, when you're making stuff for other people now, 2024, it's kind of hard unless you're completely engaged in a local community. It's pretty hard to make things without being engaged online in some way. So what I've been trying to do is look at ways for me to do things that are accessible to everyone that don't require me having to live on the internet. So for example, social media is a perfect example. Social media relies on you being in social media. All the algorithms work this in. If you just post stuff, your posts aren't going to get seen much. So you're supposed to engage with people. You're supposed to read other people's thing. You know, these make sense. They want to build this community. So they're going to encourage the behavior that builds the community. But the problem with that is it means you have to spend a lot of time on Twitter, a lot of time on Instagram, a lot of time on whatever else there is, a lot of time in YouTube comments. It's not what I want to do because there's nothing inherently wrong with those things. Once again, we're talking about me and we're talking about my overstimulation. That stuff is not everything that gets me over here. You know, dealing with that is not going to get me out of this overstimulated state. It's only going to take about half of it off. The other half is me consuming too much, listening to too many podcasts, watching too many videos on YouTube, just hammering stuff into my head with no time for this stuff to really, for me to even contemplate the things that are coming in. I compare the difference between the overstimulated state and the proper stimulated state as the difference between driving through a city at 80 miles an hour and walking through a city or a town. You're going to see the same sights. But which one are you going to remember more of? You know, it takes you 3 or 4 minutes to walk past that Wendy's. It takes you 3 or 4 minutes to walk past that Lutheran church. In the car, boom, those things are just going past. You're registering them, but there's nothing. In that 1 second, you're driving past that Walmart. You don't have time to think about, what would it be like to shop in there? I wonder what people shop in there. I wonder if that Walmart's doing well. I wonder if it's doing bad. You don't have time to contemplate it. You just have time to register it. Oh, Walmart. Next thing. And that's what our online lives can become like. Next thing in the feed. 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 Next podcast. Next video. We want to pull ourselves into a state more where we're walking through things. Cool. There's nothing wrong with the YouTube videos. Hey, I watch a YouTube video on this. Now let me sit and think about that. You know, I don't have to sit here afterwards and stare at the wall. I'm about to be dramatic about it. But you can do something else that doesn't involve watching another video. You watch a video, maybe you get up and you go, you know, now it's time for me to go put that load of laundry in. So you go, you put that load of laundry in. What are you going to be thinking about when you put that load of laundry in? Maybe that video. Maybe it's going to give you a little time, a little air. You know, the thing with wine, I'm not a big wine person, but I used to work in catering, so I know somewhat about wine, and I know that when you open a bottle of red wine, you let it air out a little bit, you know, because theoretically, if it's maintained its seal, the air that's in there is the air that went in there when it was bottled. So you want that air to come out, and you want the air, the new air, to go in, and then it's actually going to affect the bouquet, which is going to affect the taste of the wine. And that's kind of the same thing with things that we put in our head, right? We want it to take on a little bit of air because it enriches it. Kind of, this is something people probably would debate me about, but I'm drinking whiskey straight and drinking whiskey on ice. Like, I like a rye whiskey. I don't drink much anymore, but rye whiskey was something I really loved. I always liked it on ice because I felt like the cool of the ice and just added a little bit of water to cut whiskey a little bit actually brought out more flavor in the whiskey, and it was more enjoyable to drink. Now, like I said, that's debatable, but you understand my idea here. So I've been thinking about ways that I can still create things without having to live in this next state. And part of that kind of goes back to something that, an idea I was first introduced to as far as content from the book Rework by the guys who make 37 Signals. They make Basecamp, they make Hey Email, now they make Hey Calendar. Jason Fried and David Hanemeyer Hansen. And it's the idea of byproducts. The idea of you do this, and as a natural result of this thing, the activity you do over here, this byproduct is made. And sometimes those byproducts that are made are also useful. And I think the example they use in the book has been many, many years since I read the book. If not, this is a good example to use, was how, I think it was Brickford, the charcoal company. I think that's the name of the company. I think that's the right one. How this charcoal company started was going back to Henry Ford. And when Henry Ford was making the Model Ts had wood in them. There was wood slats that were in them. I mean, but they had all these scraps of wood slats laying around, byproduct. You know, they're making this car. As a result of making this car, you have all this extra wood that doesn't work in the car because it's not the right size, too short, or it's got a knot in it or something. They were just throwing it away. So what they started doing was burning it and making it into charcoal and then selling the charcoal. So this natural byproduct became another product. So I always think about that. And I think about things, especially when thinking about reducing your input, reducing your overload. Think about things that you're doing naturally. Think about things that you're already doing and how you can multiply the effects of those. You know, a great example, a very simple example is I make these as videos, but when I publish them onto Substack, you know, I put this on X and I put it on Substack. When I put it on Substack, Substack just takes the audio out and it sends the audio out to all the podcast players. So my podcast is a byproduct of my videos. Doesn't cost, you know, it's no extra work for me. So why wouldn't I do that? You know, I'm a big fan of audio anyways. I actually resisted doing videos because I prefer the audio format. I think it's more intimate, but not everybody's like me. So I put it out for both kinds of people. And I don't have to do a separate thing to make that happen. It's a natural byproduct. So what I've been looking at is, what are things that I do naturally? First thing, generally, and we'll get into this a little bit more, generally I read a good majority of the books that I read on one of my Kindles. Built into the Kindle is Goodreads integration. Now, I have considered posting onto X when I finish a book or what book I'm reading. I've played around with, in the past, I've played around with taking pictures of the books I'm reading, which works great when you're working with a beautiful physical book. People like looking at pictures of these things. They don't really like looking at the picture of the book cover on your e-ink screen in your Instagram feed. I actually just did a test of this recently. I don't think I got one like. It was just a test to see if that's changed. So I've tested ways of sharing what I'm reading in kind of a low friction way. And all of it still requires more work than I want to do, because I got to think about if I'm doing a post, like, do I say I'm reading this book, or do I have to write out a tweet and make it interesting? Do I got to sell it? If I'm reading on the Kindle and people don't like to look at the Kindle images, does that mean I got to go find somebody else's picture of the physical book and fake it and put that up? And then now I'm a fake and I'm a liar, like half the people on Instagram. Sorry, had to get that dig in. It's creating a new project. Now, granted, what we're talking about is not a high, not a high stress project. But it is another project. And when we're talking about overload, when we're already up here, when we're already to the brim of the cup, you know, like, before, let me make this metaphor about the brim before we go back to that Instagram thing or posting about books thing. When you have a cup, actually, let's use this can as an example. You got a can. I shouldn't just blatantly show the brand. They're not paying me anything. You got a can. Now, you're going to fill this up. You're going to put water in it. It's fine if this can's empty. You pour water in there, it's great. That's what this is meant to do. It's meant to hold water. But when you get to the brim, when you get to where it's full, if you keep pouring the stuff in here, you know what's going to happen. It's going to pour over the sides. Now, what happens when things pour over the sides is you're no longer dealing with the water in the cup, or in the can in this case. You're dealing with the water that's spilling out. So you're dealing with the excess, and you're no longer dealing with the content of the can. You're dealing with excess of the can. The content becomes irrelevant because you're stuck dealing with this excess in a panic state, kind of like when you're in a boat that's sinking and you're bailing water. You're not concerned about anything except for bailing the water. So what I like to think about is content and input and stimulus are the same way. It's fine if you're down here below your chin, because that's below the brim of the cup. You can manage that and you can focus on what you're putting inside the can. But when you're up here, when you're above your head, you're spilling out the top and you're no longer dealing with the content that's going in your head. So now back to posting about books. Even though, like I said, that is a project and it's not a high stress project, when you're already spilling out of the can, add in even a tiny, fairly easy project becomes a burden because it's just another bale of water that you got to toss over. So that's not really a byproduct. But like I said, what's built into the Kindle is Goodreads. So it occurs to me that I should just share my Goodreads profile. If you are interested in what I'm reading right now, you want to see what books are on my shelf, because I usually have like 10 or 15 books. I always have one main book, which is focused on a project. I just showed it to you. Shop Class of Soulcraft. This is a reread, but that's the main book I'm reading right now. I usually read my main book. That's whatever project I'm working on. I usually read it in physical form because it gets into my brain better that way. I don't need to explain why. It doesn't need to be true for everybody. I just know it's true for me. Everything else that I read for pleasure and curiosity, I read on the Kindle. And if I'm lucky, I usually get them on sale for like $2, which is why I have like 1,400 books on my Kindle. You just got to look at those daily deals. And here's a big tip. Find all the books you want to read. Don't save a want-to-read list anywhere else. Save it as a list in Amazon. And then every day, go into that list and sort it by price. And you'll see when a book that you put on there has dropped in price. You'll see when it has a deal. You'll see when it drops down to like $2. Buy it. Usually $14.99, $2 today. Boom, buy it. You'll get through that book, that list of books that you want a lot faster for a lot less money. Don't spread it too much because we don't want Amazon to get too smart on that and stop making it so we can do that. But that's how I've collected such a large library. Also, going back to the Goodreads thing, I share the profile. it's already like when I open a book on here and I start reading it, it automatically asks me, do you want to add this to the currently reading bookshelf? Sometimes I open a book just because I need to remember something for it, so I say no. But if it's a book I'm going to start reading, even if I only read a chapter today and then like I don't go back to it for like 3 or 4 weeks, I do that. And I'm trying to get myself into the habit of when I finish reading for the day to share my status to Goodreads so that people can see what book I'm working on that day. Oh, he read 15% more of The Death of the Artist. I'm also considering doing very short reviews when I finish books and publishing those on the Goodreads as well, just to keep it all in one place, to contribute to a community that's focused on books anyways is a good thing. I don't want these to be things that I work on. It's just, I got post-its and notebooks, index cards laying around all over here. If you're listening to this on audio, I just picked up an example of each of those because they're literally on my desk. Even if I can reach that one. Pocket notebooks all over the place. So sometimes I'm reading, even if I'm reading for pleasure, just something strikes me, I make a note. Well, when I get to the end of the book, I can just look, hey, did I write anything down about this book? Maybe it's 3-4 sentences. I could take those 3-4 sentences, puff it up into a paragraph, publish that on the Goodreads. Not a big deal. It's already something I would want to do anyways. I like to. I would probably do it in my journal anyhow to remind myself what I thought of that book if I ever want to go back. So that's one way I can do something that allows me to use a byproduct, but still be putting stuff out there to not disappear from the world. In addition, I'm trying to do the same thing with Letterboxd, which is a way to do that for movies. Obviously, this happens less. Generally, I can watch a movie once a week. Sometimes I go on a binge and I watch, a bunch of movies in 1 week. Sometimes I go like a month and I go, I haven't watched any movies. No pressure here. It's not a blog where people are waiting for the next one. It's just, hey, if you follow me on Letterboxd, you follow me on Goodreads, you're going to find out these updates when they happen. If I happen to write a review, you're going to see it. If I don't write a review, you're not going to see it. It's, it's low friction. So I can reserve some more sanity without disappearing once again. What else do I have here? Let's see. Okay, I got to tell you a story. This is funny. And then it's going down a little bit. Let's go back to the hat. The idea that you should always be posting stuff and that's the only way that you're going to get attention, it's the only way that people are going to see your stuff, it's the only way that algorithms are going to pick you up, it's kind of a lie. Kind of a lie in the long term. It's not necessarily a lie in the short term. What I mean by that is, yeah, you put up that post on X and nobody sees it in the first 24 hours. Yeah, they're probably just not going to see it. That's just the way it is. But if you were to feed that into something, like if you pay for a service like Hype Fury, this is something I do. If I think posts are valuable, like anytime I post a video, I feed it into Hype Feed and it goes into a cycle and it reposts from that. It's like a bucket of all my videos sit in Hype Fury. And every morning it goes, hey, videos, which one of you should we repost today? And it'll repost it in the morning. But it's a really smart algorithm in the sense that it does, like if I, let's say, without having to come up names here, let's say I have 5 videos. I've got video 1, video 2, video 3, video 4, and video 5. On Monday, it's going to go back and say, hey, video 1, have we posted you in the last 7 days? Oh, we have? Okay, we're not going to post you today. And it's going to do the same for everyone. Maybe it gets to video 5 and it goes, oh, we just posted you 9 days ago? Okay, we can post you today. If it gets to where all 5 have been posted in the last week, it's not going to post anything. And that's nice so that people don't keep seeing the same thing over and over again. And the more videos I make, the more that's in that bucket and the more it has to pull from, the more variety it's going to be and the less annoying it would be. But the reason for this is the same thing as the idea of evergreen content. It's the idea of, hey, I made this, but you might have missed the post when I made it. So you might not even know I made a video about digital overload. And now you see it and you go, oh, hey, I want to watch that. I'm not forcing it on you. You just didn't know it existed. And now you have another chance. So in the long term, I didn't have to do this promotion, keep pumping it and make it and make sure everybody knows it. Pump three, four times the first day. I don't have to do that. But the real funny story, this is the part that made me laugh. That part is just kind of common sense. The part that made me laugh is, some of you may be aware of this, some of you might not be, but about a year ago, that's what happens when you drink carbonated water when you record a video. I had two YouTube channels. The first YouTube channel, honestly, it actually started out with me talking about Obsidian and stuff I was doing in Obsidian. And then after I did like three or four of those videos, I was like, I don't like doing this. I don't like doing tech videos. There's a lot of reasons. Like one reason is no matter what you say, no matter what you talk about in the video, somebody's always going to ask, what theme are you using? Every damn time. You can start the video and say, before we go any further, I'm using the lobster theme today. And somebody's going to ask that question. Not a big deal, but that area of YouTube, I don't care enough about apps. Should be obvious by now. I don't care enough about apps to live and breathe that and to pump one of those out every week. Not me. Every once in a while, maybe I would do a video like on X on something like that. But since I'm not really working with a lot of apps right now, not really a lot for me to show you guys. You know where I'm working right now? On paper. I'm back in the real world. And I'm feeling fine. Back to the YouTube story. So let's try not to shake the camera. I had two YouTube channels. One, like I said, started out as Obsidian, but then I started doing videos on EDC. You know, like, check out this knife I'm carrying, check out this new wallet I got, check out this pocket notebook, stuff that I dig. And at the time I was buying a lot of gear. I think I was bored. So I was having fun exploring gear, and it was just, I was into it. And stuff was doing okay. I was getting a couple hundred views on each video, nothing crazy. And then I got to a certain point where I was like, oh, I'm not a gearhead anymore. So I stopped doing videos. But before I did that, I had started a second channel. And the second channel, I was talking about building an analog Zettelkasten using 4x6 index cards. In fact, I think the box is right over there. And I was just talking about what I was learning, mistakes I was making, stuff like that. Man, we're going to have a problem with those sunspots again on my face. Sorry about that. Anyways, I did maybe 10, 15 of those videos, and then I stopped using the Zettelkasten. I didn't have time to be doing it, and I just stopped doing it. Those channels were just sitting in stasis. Now, the EDC channel, that's the account that I use to browse YouTube. So I'm always in that account. I'm watching videos in that account. That's where, you know, if I'm leaving comments or liking videos and stuff, I'm liking it from that account. It's just the main account. So every time to this day, a year later, I sign in, I see the bell icon. There's something on the bell icon. I haven't made a video for that channel in, I'm going to say at least maybe 7 months, 6 months, we'll say, to be generous. Somewhere in the summer, I think, is when I stopped. Still to this day, I sign in, there's a bell icon. New subscriber. I don't know what the subscriber count on that is. My point here is, I haven't done anything with that channel. Those videos have just been sitting there. And the algorithm keeps pushing them through. Hey, you want to watch a video on that backpack? Guess what? You did a video on that backpack. Boom, here you go. People are still watching it. Pretty cool. But the funny thing to me is I completely forgot about the other channel, which at the time I think was called... it had multiple names. One time it was called something about analog, like reviving analog or something like that. Rediscovering analog, I think is what it was. And then right before I stopped using it, I changed it to my name, just Curly Green K Hall. And one day recently, actually, I think it was 2 days ago, 3 days ago, I was like, I told you, I went through a period where I was watching a little too much YouTube. And I noticed that it was plugging a video of mine to me, but from one of my other channels. So I do have a third channel, and the third channel is where these videos eventually get archived there. This is something I started doing new. I don't put new videos there. That archive is always 4 or 5 videos behind these. Like, I think the Satanic Confusion video, just that's the first one I put up. That's the only thing that's up there so far. And it showed that to me. It said, would you like to watch this? I'm like, no, I made that. That's me. I just thought it was funny. Well, a couple days ago, I saw my face show up on my feed again. Actually, it wasn't my face. I saw one of my videos show up. It was my hands, actually, and my Zettelkasten box. And it was recommending me one of my Zettelkasten videos because I told you, I've been watching more analog videos. So I was like, oh, you're doing analog videos. Check out this video on analog Zettelkasten that I made. But when it popped up this time, I noticed underneath, it said how many views that video had. 4,500 views. I had no idea. I mean, those videos, when I was putting them out, were getting like 20 views. 4,500. So I went over that channel, and almost every video on that channel, with the exception of like one that was a little bit off topic, has over 1,000 views. And that channel's just been sitting there. I only made like 10 videos. It's just, I made like 10 videos, disappeared. Haven't been there for 6 months, and the channel's blowing up. So don't believe the hype on having to live constantly online for stuff to hit. The reason that Zettelkasten stuff, and the reason the EDC stuff, let's just focus on the Zettelkasten. The reason that Zettelkasten stuff is still hitting is because it's a niche audience. I made videos about a topic most people don't care about. And because it's a topic most people don't care about, there are not a lot of people making videos on that. It was something I was into at the time. It's something I still think is neat and interesting. I just don't make videos on it anymore. I don't do it anymore. But when people go to look for that, their options are limited. So you made something for this specific audience, and that's going to have a long life because there's always going to be people in that niche. People rediscovering that niche. It's the big ocean, small ocean thing. You know, you want to make content for the big ocean. This is the problem with all these platforms that are always telling you, what the success of your videos, how many opens of your email you got, how many likes your post on X got or your Instagram reel got. They're all trying to veer you towards making more of the super popular stuff, the super big ocean stuff, the stuff that has potential for having millions and millions of audience members. But the problem is when you make content for that stuff, you're competing against everybody. Because everybody's doing the same thing, and the algorithms and the analytics are telling everybody the same thing too. Whereas when you make something you're passionate about that's for a smaller group, and there's only like 3 or 4 people making videos on that, your video is always going to get you in there because there's only 3 or 4 people. So you don't have to worry so much about, I think when you're making stuff for the big ocean, that's when you got to be like, watch my stuff, check it out right now, watch it now. Because it will disappear into that big ocean. And maybe I'm talking about the ocean a lot right now because I got a my wallpaper on my computer right now is a giant blue whale. But when you make stuff for the small ocean or for a pond, it doesn't get lost because there's not much in that pond. So you don't have to pump it as much. So that's another way to create without having to go up here and live in that overload world. So spending a lot of time thinking about the stuff that, hey, you know, what's stuff that I'm into? And just get weird. It's Hunter S. Thompson, you know, get weird. What I mean by get weird is not try to be weird. I mean, like, do the stuff that you're into that you think maybe nobody else cares about. Might fail, you might succeed, but you know what's going to happen either way? You're going to enjoy it because it's something you enjoy. So at the very least, you're doing it for yourself. But if you get lucky enough to snag into a niche audience, that's awesome. Then maybe you can continue to do the things that you love. That's my goal, is to find more and more those things that fill me up when I do them, and to find a way to share them with people in a way that doesn't take away from the experience for me. That's the problem with, you know, like I experimented with shorts a little bit there just to see what would happen. I don't have time to take this video and break it up into shorts. I don't. You know why? You know what my time is for? Doing more stuff that I'm into. Making shorts is not something I'm into. I saw something the other day and it had clips from this video that Lana Del Rey posted. I don't know when this happened, but it's a video of her telling people, hey, just to let y'all know, I love y'all, but tomorrow I'm deactivating all of my social media accounts. I'm deactivating all of my social media accounts. And it wasn't this thing of like, she was mad at social media and any of this stuff. She said she was deactivating them because she had other interests. There were things in life that she wanted to devote time to instead of Instagram posts, instead of X posts, instead of YouTube or whatever she was doing. She wanted to put time into those things and not into these other things. She wanted to focus on things she cared about instead of stuff she doesn't give a damn about. And I think that's incredibly inspiring. So I'm looking for ways to do that. What are things that I can be into that make me happy? And maybe, you know, other people want to do it too. Like these videos, I don't know how many people are interested in this stuff. I don't care. Some of the stuff I just, you know, I'm not a highly social person. I live in a state where I don't know a lot of people. Sometimes I have things in my head and I need to communicate them. So I tell them to you. That's the whole reason this exists. That's it. That's the whole reason. There's no content strategy here. You know, I started doing this podcast talking about books when I finished them. And then I started feeling like I was reviewing books and, you know, just it was becoming so structured. And I thought, you know, maybe I'll just deal with difficult ideas. But then that became too much of a container. And I realized, you know, well, what it is I just want to come on here and talk. And whatever I got to talk about, that's what I'm talking about. And from what you see, you guys, those of you who watch the videos, you prefer the ones where I come in and I have no idea where I'm going. You know, I always have a post-it so we don't end up with me going, but anyways, what else do we have on here? Speaking of which, let's talk about this physical book thing. I want to tell you something I discovered recently. It's something I've heard before, but it never really hit me until it hit me this week. When you do the analog Zettelkasten method, you're gonna learn. Most likely you're gonna learn about a man named Nicholas Luhmann. He didn't really invent it, but he pretty much perfected that process. I'm not gonna tell you about the process. You can go watch it. Go watch videos from Scott Shepard. He's pretty much the expert on that stuff. He wrote a book on it. Anti-Net Zettelkasten, pretty much all inclusive in that book. The thing that Nicholas Luhmann did, and this is one point where Luhmann and Scott Shepard diverge. When you, let me grab this. what I'm grabbing in this analog Zettelkasten book, because those watching the video, this might help you understand what I'm talking about a little bit more. But you got these tabs. I know you won't be able to read them. You don't need to read them, but you got these tabs that separate your cards, right? And when you're putting stuff in here, you obviously don't want to throw it all in a box. You want to fill this, I think this box fit over 1,000 index cards. You don't want just one block of index cards, because you're not going to find anything. So you want to find a way to separate them. And Zettelkasten has sections. Scott Shepper creates his sections based on the academic disciplines. So, you know, there's like a life sciences section, there's an arts section, so on and so forth. Lumen did something very different. Lumen created, for the most part, he wasn't 100% on everything. He moved back and forth. Sometimes he did this a little bit different. But generally, what he seemed to have done the most was he would wait till he had a project, and then that would be a section. So if we got one of these section cards, for example, this one I have here in front of me, physical health. So this is where, when I was doing Zettelkasten, this is where I stored any cards that I was about knowledge about physical health. That's very similar to Scott Shepper in the sense, like, here's a category, and I'm going to fill that category. What Lumen was doing instead was, I'm going to write a paper on the economic hardships of post-war Germany, post-World War II Germany. He would create a section called Economic Hardships on Post-World War II Germany, and then everything that he researched for that article, that paper that he was writing, all the cards that he accumulated for that would go in that section. So it's project-based. I understood that stuff, but it never clicked with me. And another, actually, let me throw something in here too. An advice you'll hear from some people, if you watch enough videos or listen to enough stuff about people talking about reading effectively, one of the things that you will hear is read with a purpose. And what that means is, hey, that book looks interesting, is not reading with a purpose. There's nothing wrong with that. I read for curiosity all the time, but there's a difference. So let's use these two for the video people. Let's use my Kindle as an example of reading for curiosity, and this physical book as an example of reading for purpose. The reason these represent that is because that's literally what role these two devices, yes, a book is a device in a way. So what role these two things, these two technologies represent in my life? When I read for curiosity and for enjoyment, it's either an audiobook or it's Kindle, because I can get them cheap, I get them on sale, I have a whole bunch of stuff stored up. Eventually I'll pick those up and read them. But when I read for purpose, I generally read a paper book, because as I said earlier, stuff from paper books just, it gets in my head better and I understand it better. I don't care generally if I have a deep understanding of a book I'm reading for curiosity, because I'm only reading to tickle that curiosity. I'm not reading to become an expert. But in the case of reading for a project, because a project for me usually is a book that I want to write. I don't always end up writing them, but I try to. You know, I'm setting out with that goal. In that case, I kind of do want to become an expert. So having more comprehension is more important. The reason I bring this up is the reason people say read with a purpose, the reason that Nicholas Lumen created his sections based on a project, is because it gives you a focus and a filter that you don't get when you don't read or work towards a purpose. So for example, as I said, Sharp Class as Soulcraft here by Matthew B. Crawford. I'm reading this for a project that I'm doing, I'm hoping to do, on small town America. This book is not about small town America. I happen to have this book already. As I said, I've read it before. I looked at it on my shelf and I was like, you know, there might be a few things in there that will be tangentially related to my project. And since this is a physical book that I have now and the other books I ordered aren't here yet, let's read this one. Well, when I read this, I can read it with one thought in mind. Does it relate to my project? And the reason that I'm reading with that thought in mind is I don't need to fill out a card unless I read something that's related to my project. It gives me a filter. And it actually makes it easier for me because I could read something in here and go, ooh, that's really interesting. But it's not related to my project. Well, it's just interesting. Move on. Next page. But if I hit on something, I go, that's for the project. Boom. It goes on here. That makes you read with a laser focus and attention because you know what you're looking for. When you don't read with purpose, you don't know what you're looking for. It's a form of entertainment. I'm trying to move in a way so these lights aren't across my face. So that's been a big thing for me. And the difference between making that distinction between the Kindle and the physical book has been really helpful too. I think I got one more thing and then we'll get out of here. One thing I've been considering, and this is going back to the idea of the byproducts. There are just things that I collect as far as notes go that aren't related to projects. There's, you saw that box. That box is full of stuff that I've collected from reading and other media that have nothing to do with my project. But probably, yeah, there might be a section in here for small towns, but 98% of that box has nothing to do with it. And I'm considering taking that stuff and creating an Obsidian published site. And if you don't know what that is, Obsidian's a note-taking app, but you can publish all of your notes. And it'll kind of look like a blog, except it doesn't have a timeline. It's all in folders, just like you would look at it in a note app. The reason for that being is it allows me to do something that I would naturally do, like save things that I think are interesting, develop ideas over time and so forth. Digital gardening is a term that people will refer to this as. And just hit the publish button and then be pushing stuff out in the world without me actually having to sit down to write a blog, which I'm just not going to do because I'm trying to work on a book. That's where my attention is. So I'm considering doing that as a way of creating another byproduct. So that's kind of where I am. Maybe we should, what should we title this episode? The byproduct of something? The natural byproduct of curiosity. That's a good title. Let's roll with that one. That's about how much thought I put into the title of my videos. So with all that said, I'll, you know, for everybody, wherever you're seeing this, hopefully I remember to do this for all of you. I'll put a link to my about page on Substack, because that's going to give you the link to my Goodreads, so you can follow along with what I'm reading. It's also going to give you a link to my Letterboxd, so you can follow along with movies. It'll give you a link to anything else. And if I ever end up doing that Obsidian publish, there'll be a link for that there too. And actually, before we get out of here, I did want to what these books are about or anything. I'm just going to tell you what books are on my active shelf right now. And there are a lot. Like I said, I jump between them. Shop Class's Soulcraft is for the project. That's my main book. That's the book that I make sure I read every day. Everything else here, I pick up as I have interest. Well, you know what? I feel like getting a few pages of that in today. Kind of like streaming, you know? You know, there's like one thing you're watching, like one show you're into, but then there's other stuff where you're like, ah, I might watch a couple episodes of that today, maybe. So Glass House by Brian Alexander. This is actually a book for the project. And this is the book where I realized that I just wasn't comprehending stuff from the Kindle as well. So I read about 7% of that book and it's on pause. I've ordered a physical copy of it. When I get a physical copy, then it'll become whenever that's the book that I'm reading, that will become my main book so that I can focus on that for the project. So that book will be picked up again. Chaos, Charles Manson, the CIA, and the Secret History of the 60s by Tom O'Neill. That one looks pretty awesome. I've only read the introduction, but it's a great introduction. CEO of the Sofa by PJ O'Rourke. About 17% of the way through that one. Excuse me again. Newsroom Confidential, Margaret Sullivan, about the dramatic and sad changes to credibility in the news world over the last decade or decades. Jed Talks by Jed McKenna. Kingdom of Speech by Tom Wolfe. How to Think by Alan Jacobs. Revolt of the Public by Martin Gurry, which actually is something I picked up for the project too. Super heavy, super really not related to the book. So I read half of it. I'll probably go back to it. And then Death of the Artist by William, God, I don't want to mispronounce your last name, but I'm going to. Dereciwicz, Dereciwicz. Tell me how that's pronounced. Dereciwicz. That's my guess. Yeah. So those are my active books right now. And with that, let's put the hat back on and say adios, amigos.